What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's also you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's 2:15 a.m. at the Hotel Cecil, and you're listening to Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call. I am Emily Yoshida. I am back with my Night Call friends on the West Coast, Tess and Molly. Sorry, usually we introduce ourselves, but I'm just too excited now, so I'm introducing you guys for you.
You've been gone so long, you have to just take over entirely, of course.
We've all forgotten.
This is my show
names.
Now. yes, it feels great. It feels like it's been forever, but I was away, as was detailed on the show, marrying somebody I met on a podcast.
Met on this podcast, technically.
This podcast's grandfather.
Yes. Grandfather?
Yeah.
Grandfather.
Like, I would think of it as like a mother.
Grandmother.
Grandmother. Because there's been other incarnations along
the
way.
That's true. Yeah, there have been. There's a MCU of the girls in hoodies.
Yeah, we talked about this last week about all the podcasts that we've had.
Molly's five podcasts.
I just keep starting more. I can't stop podcasting. Oh. Emily.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you.
Me too. I really wish that we could have podcasted like from afar, because I feel like there are so many things I wanted to tell you guys about, especially when we were on our honeymoon.
We got some really good texts from you at times that were like made sense to us.
Right. Yes.
Wait, like what? It's all kind of a fog.
Oh, now. You know, just like sometimes I'm awake very late at night and maybe it's daytime in Japan during that time.
Yes.
And you send a nice text of some forest crabs. And then all we talk about on this podcast while you're gone is the forest crabs.
We need to spend a minute talking about the forest crabs. Well, also, you should just tell us tell us all of the highlights, because your Instagram was full of some really good ones, and we have to get to the Lost in Translation Hotel.
I felt like we were all on vacation together.
We were.
Oh, good. First, I rarely am on vacation, but I guess this is the first time I was really on a vacation with Instagram stories. So I really liked falling back on Instagram stories instead of, say, Twitter to talk about whatever was going on, because it felt like I didn't have to explain or make a joke about whatever I was doing.
Yeah.
I could just be like, look at this cool thing that I'm looking at, and that could be it. I didn't have to, like, be a writer about it.
Right.
So that felt like a kind of nice way to share the vacation without being too... without having the social media thing take it over. Mm-hmm.
So there were so many cool things to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the other nice thing about stories, is it doesn't all need to go on your actual feed. It can just sort of like...
My only complaint about stories is that then they go away. And
they go away.
All I wanted was to see the
forest
crabs again.
I saved the video of the forest crabs. So I made the joke on Instagram that they were confused and thought it was the ocean. I think it's more like they just got washed up from a nearby creek and were just like wandering on the pavement. So we went during the rainy season, which I think is kind of the reason why our tickets weren't a zillion dollars when we were out there. And it really wasn't that bad. But the one day where it really rained a ton was, of course, the one day we decided we were going to be walking around Kyoto and having our most touristy day.
It was so beautiful, though.
I know.
It was nice. It was very atmospheric, and it was nice because it wasn't too crowded because of the weather. But the side note, very shortly after I got married, I bought my first pair of Tevas. And I feel like this transformation took place over the course of 1 week, where I'm like, I love my Tevas. I'm going to go be a tourist and wear my squishy sandals.
You entered Teva mode.
Seriously, because when it's raining that much, you can't even really wear boots because it'll just get inside the boot. So I just thought, why fight it? Just be barefoot and... let the water wash over
your
feet.
You became a forest crab yourself.
I did, yeah. I became slightly amphibious. So we were leaving Nanzenji, which is this huge Buddhist temple. And of course, as we were leaving, the 5 p.m. was the closing time. So we couldn't be inside anymore. And then it just starts pouring down rain. So we were just bolting down this path, trying to get back to the subway, which basically took an hour because... it would start to lighten up, and then we'd start walking, and then it would start pouring again, and we'd find shelter under the nearest thing. But
see, that sounds so nice, because we are in a place that doesn't have a rainy season anymore.
It's so dusty. Yeah.
Tess and I talk about how we look at the weather app every day, and it says 0% chance of rain
for the entire week.
Just for the entire year.
Yeah,
it's every day.
And you can just fill in rain with whatever else you want to have happen.
Yes.
Sometimes it'll be raining and it'll say 0% chance of rain. Sounds so.
It was so moist,
and it was
there.
It was really moist. Looking. Everything you posted, I was like, "Oh my god, plants, beautiful!"
It's so crazy because we were there. We were staying outside of Kyoto in this a ryokan, which is the kind of a bed and breakfast, the Japanese version of a bed and breakfast. And the one we stayed at is they had this riverside thing where they turned all the lights at a certain point so you could see the fireflies, which was so funny because it reminded me of you, Molly, because. There were three fireflies on the river.
Oh, because you were
nights.
With me when I saw the fireflies in New York. And I was like,
you lost your shit.
Flipped
lost
out.
My
what
mind.
Are those? Yeah.
Well, I think I've said this before, but this is a lot of LA kids I know have this thing where the only place we've ever seen fireflies is on Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
that's what I expect them to look like. And then when we saw them in real life, I was like, what? They exist.
I was looking for them here. Nobody tells you there's no fireflies in LA. When I moved here, I was
trade-off.
Cool, it's summer. Where are the bugs? That,
it's the trade-off for less mosquitoes is you also
true.
Don't get fireflies.
Well, no, but now we have the mosquitoes too.
Well, now we also have some mosquitoes because we're getting...
Ugh.
But it's not raining. How do you have mosquitoes?
There's
it's
just
not
some
raining?
Stagnant
pools.
Water. You know,
people have pools.
Just
there's the mighty LA River.
Yeah.
Yes. Just the roaring LA River.
At this bed and breakfast, did you have to have communal breakfast and dinner?
Yes, it's a well, everybody gets their own little table. It's
okay, that's pretty.
I mean,
good.
It's like very formal. It's very old school.
Communal
and formal,
tables
and
you're are like our Tessa's worst nightmare.
They are.
No, 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 no. You don't have to. You don't have to talk to anybody else there.
There
except,
we go.
Except huge exception, and I think not a good trade off.
Oh no.
This place, like many of these types of super traditional, like I would say, like fancy ryokans, had geishas. Like they come through and they like perform some kind of dance or whatever. I mean, I didn't know that this was a part of this hotel's deal when I booked it, and then I saw it later on. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I have very little interest in that, but okay. But it's like a mandatory part of your meeting that you have to like sit and watch the geisha performance. But they're maikos. They're like geishas in training. But but then they come through and they talk. Like to each table,
and you have to talk to them,
and you have to talk to them, and it's like the one of them that came through and talked. She spoke a little more English, and it was okay. But then the rest of them mostly don't, and so I was speaking to them in Japanese, and my Japanese is really bad, and also takes a lot of brain power for me to use. And especially at the end of the day, I feel like almost wiped out. Like I cannot like speak Japanese. Yeah. Like it just it would like take it out of me at the end of every day to try to have a conversation with the Maiko. But yeah, so that I would rather be at a communal table with other people who are staying at the hotel than with geisha.
What
honestly.
Did you guys talk about?
Like, oh, where are you from? And I found it to be supremely awkward. Ugh. But like the drunk businessmen who were there for dinner got a kick out of it. So I guess it's not really for me.
What else did you see?
And where else did you go?
Our three main places we went were Kyoto, Osaka, and Tokyo. Osaka is the best. We only spent a day there, but I really want to spend like a whole trip there next time I go to Japan because it's really, really fun and the food is amazing and people are just like, it's more fun. But I wanted to tell you guys. So this campaign was started a few years ago in Kyoto to get more people to use public transportation and to use the subway. They decided like the best tactic to attract people to the subway would be to make like cute anime girl mascots for the train. And so it's called like the Moe Moe Kyoto like campaign. and they have this full cast of characters now. Like this started a while ago. And so by now they've unveiled more and more characters. And there's and like the main girl, she has like a brother, and then another one of her friends has a brother, and there are all these bios for them. And I think they made some kind of short animation, but it's just hilarious because like all of the subways are plastered with these ads of like these cute anime girls like holding their subway passes and like showing how cool and cute it is to have a subway.
Does it work? Do people ride the subway more?
I guess it's been successful because they've kept it up.
Are they like moe versions of the trains? Like are they supposed to be like a character who is the train?
No.
So
they're riders, right?
Yeah, they're riders, and I guess they're supposed to be like Kyoto residents, but they're also named after some of the different stops on the Kyoto subway. It's so funny because they all have these like official profiles. It's like somebody at this who works for the city.
Yeah,
made
how
up
do
these,
we get
like,
this job?
Anime characters. I know it's amazing, but there's one of the guys who's like kind of like a jockish guy wearing a pink hoodie. Is named Takeru and. Says Takeru attended the same high school as Ryo and his best friend, who's like the other boy there. He has an easygoing and optimistic side. After graduating from high school, his desire to become a bread maker led him to study at a bakery in Kyoto. He likes how people can buy bread around Kyoto's subway stations.
Now I'm just picturing somebody riding the train and falling in love with one of these characters.
It seems as though that happens. And people are collecting the posters, right, Emily?
Yeah, yeah. And I was trying to find them because I realized that this was a thing. And then I started trying to figure out where I could get the posters. But like they have different promotions. Like if you get a day pass and then go to the zoo, you can get a poster or something. But like none of those were happening while I was there. I was so charmed and delighted by by the cute.
We should have more
subway.
Train mascots.
Yeah, we should. Here.
I know.
There's that really good Twitter account. I think it's Mondo Mascots, and it's all just Japanese mascots for different things. And a lot of it is like mascots for like a precinct or whatever.
Yes.
You know. I like the idea of just having a mascot for everything. It's great.
The grain industry or something.
Yeah.
Weedy.
Some of the ones I've seen on Mondo mascots, it's like they're always about like, well, like their main trades are like growing melons and like oak trees. Yeah. So it's like an oak tree with a melon for a head.
Well, the weird thing
so
about
great. I love that.
The boy who's not the bread baker, who's like the older brother, his picture makes him look like he's just like shady. He's got something to hide. And his description is like, you know, he's really cold to his younger sister, but he like is protective of her. But it was also like he hates when the trains don't run on time.
Yeah. So yeah, everybody has like normal personality traits and then one hyper specific transportation related trait.
Let's take a subway train to our next topic.
Oh, so we recently started a Facebook group from the Facebook page. And somebody whose name is Emily asked if we had any thoughts about the Cecil Hotel, which if you were following macabre stories a few years ago, you may remember from a woman named Elisa Lam, who was found dead in a water vault. Is that the correct terminology for what it was?
On the water tank. It was the water tank.
And it was like a huge mystery because she was like using Tumblr, I guess. So there was a lot of stuff to pour over, like her, you know, musings on Tumblr. And then there was a creepy...
She had been seen on the like surveillance cameras sort of wandering in the hotel.
There was a video and it was later referred to as the elevator game because the surveillance video shows her getting into an elevator and like this weird, I mean, there was no audio. It was hard to make sense of, but it looked as if there was someone outside unseen on the surveillance tape. And she was in the elevator and like almost like she wanted to step out of the elevator and then was kind of hiding in the elevator from someone. So it kind of sparked some conspiracy theories. And
there were a lot of conspiracy theories about it because it was like it's impossible to get in the water tank by yourself. So they're like, somebody must have gone with her. Like, how did she get up there? There were all these
things. How did she close the lid back over herself?
Yeah, it's really horrible.
Yeah.
And then somebody wrote a really good long piece about it that was on Medium, I think, that was about sort of going over the details. And it was like, hey, you know, the answer to this mystery is that this person probably had like mental illness. And
she had a psychotic break.
And it's like not that cool.
Right. I mean, that was the thing is that as soon as it was kind of like that, the likelihood of her having been killed and put in this vault or whatever seemed like the least likely explanation. It just became very sad.
Yeah.
But regardless, the Cecil has kind of like a creepy aura around
it. It's haunted AF.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super haunted because it's an old ass hotel in downtown LA. Yeah.
It gets all the shine as being like, the one creepy hotel in downtown
LA.
They're all creepy.
The Biltmore
is so
creepy.
Hotel.
They're all
The Biltmore.
Super.
These are
creepy.
All my favorite places in Los Angeles too. I have to say, like, I wanted to talk about this just because I was cleaning out a hard drive, or I was looking for something on a hard drive, so I found all these old pictures because I had done this kind of conceptual photo shoot for a project I'd been working on at the time, and did it at the Cecil Hotel because I needed like a kind of rundown.
Was this before or after this happened?
This was before. This would have been in like 2010 or 2011 or something.
So that would have been like two or three years before this happened.
Yeah. It was after they had done this sort of remodeling to kind of make it more of a tourist hotel or like kind of something like a low budget hotel for like people who would, you know, be using hostels or something like that. They were trying to market themselves that way. This is like the very beginnings of downtown starting to be rehabbed in a way, but so there was like a coffee shop out front, but it wasn't really that operational. Like all of these early efforts in downtown LA, it was like there is a thing that looked like gentrification, but it didn't really work.
Yeah,
right.
That's how it
like
still
nobody
is.
Worked there. Yeah. Yeah, like a lot of it is.
They
still
they put it up. They were like, we'll build a stage set of a downtown, and then people will fill it with real downtown. And then it was like, no, it's just
we'll have
all
a crepe shop
facades.
That nobody ever works at.
Well, because probably most people experience downtown driving through it. You know, it's not like, I mean, a lot of the people who are downtown are working there and don't like have that much time to explore the
idea,
like quirky places.
Like the Cecil Hotel was always like a hotel for like people passing through. It's like right in the middle of the heart of downtown. But they do keep trying to flip it and make it like now it's a fancy hotel. Mm-hmm. Like now it's gentrified. Yeah. And it just is so scary still.
So they are actually like the people who own the Bowery here in New York bought it and are going to try to make it into like an ace-like hotel.
Good luck.
I actually think this is super interesting. This is the main thing I want to talk about, is like, how long do you have to wait before a place that's haunted becomes like something that people, like young urban professionals, like are attracted to it and can find it, like think it's hip because the Black Dahlia stayed there or something. Like, right. I was totally into the Biltmore for a long time because it was the last place that the Black Dahlia was seen. And it was at the bar, the gallery bar at the Biltmore, which is incredible. It's one of the best bars, like just for appearance alone. So I lived downtown for a while, so I would go there and I would like wander through the lobby of the Cecil just because I thought all these places were so cool. But like, that was, I wasn't like rehabbing it as like a hip ace hotel. But I'm wondering, how long does it take? What's that window for where you can be like, okay, we can turn this into a ace hotel-esque project and the kids will flock to it because ghosts are hip now or whatever. Like, like, I don't know.
Right. And also, like, the Chateau Marmont is, right. Like, yeah. Many people have died there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are many ghosts, and that's part of its appeal, I guess.
My mom stayed there once, and she said that she was staying in a room with a broken mirror and was like, she just couldn't stay there. She's like, I have to move rooms. And then I feel like she just kept seeing broken mirrors and like ghostly things.
But I talked
like,
to somebody. I went on this podcast, Bizarre States, a little while ago, and they were talking about how they went to the Stanley Hotel, which is one of the Shining hotels.
Yeah.
And they were like, it actually wasn't scary at all. It was disappointingly unscary. Somebody was like having a wedding there, and we kept being like, oh, we're trying to like get spooky, and you guys are just like having a wedding. They said that they kind of like downplay the spookiness because like they got bored of people only wanting it to be a spooky Shining hotel.
Right.
And they're like, no, we're also just a nice hotel.
Yeah.
Well, they have a film fest now called the Overlook Film Festival. It's like a horror film festival. And for the past 2 years, not this year, but they've had it. Once they had it at the Stanley Hotel, and then the other, which is the one where Stephen King wrote The Shining. There's one that he wrote it, and then the one that they shot The Shining at.
Right. Well,
there's two different hotels.
They shot it in Pinewood Studios. They like built a set. But there's a couple
right.
of different hotels
but the
that
exterior.
It's based on. It's
yeah,
the
yeah.
exterior, I think, is the Stanley. And then the interior is modeled after a hotel in Yosemite.
Oh, really?
Okay. That's really old.
There's one, I think he wrote it in Colorado.
Yeah,
is
I think
that
that's
right? Yeah,
I
yeah.
think that's the Stanley. But yeah, the one in Yosemite that the interior is based off of has a lot of like Native American themed stuff because it's in Yosemite. But also that's like why people think The Shining is about genocide
right.
of Native Americans, because it kind of is. Mm-hmm. Guys.
Speaking of downtown L.A.,
yes,
we binged to varying degrees The Purge over the past week. The first Purge came out on July
4th.
4th? Yes.
July 4th.
We talked, this is one of the first things we talked about doing for the podcast, and then we were like, oh, but the movie doesn't come out until July.
Yes.
And we were like, well, that gives us several months.
A lot of time.
To watch some Purges.
Molly and I are not completely caught up on all of the Purges because it turns out that binging the Purge is also like a tremendously stressful and depressing experience
really?
Right now. Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew it would be mm-hmm. that way? But yeah, I had seen the first one when it came out on VOD. So it was probably 2014 or something. I think it came out in 2013 and then I watched it right when it came out. So it had been a couple of years, but I remembered it. As fuck.
Yeah.
I
remembered as fuck.
We both loved Anarchy.
We loved Anarchy.
Anarchy is the best in the... Somebody asked me recently to rank them, and having not watched all of them recently, I still would put Anarchy at the top.
Yeah.
I think Anarchy is the best one.
So I watched the first one and the second one, and then I'll be honest, I couldn't do the third one. I'd had enough purging. I was like, man... I got to watch something really dumb to chase this.
Well, FY, what was the dumb? Just so that we're in on the experience.
I watched Made in Chelsea, of course.
All right, there we go. There we go.
You know.
Yeah.
It was a Christmas episode.
Nice.
Good purge yeah. taste cleaner.
Purge cleanser.
Yeah, but the second Purge is all takes place in downtown LA, which is why we're talking about it. And I was like, oh, of course Emily loved this movie. It's all about like just running around through downtown LA.
Yep.
Yeah. With Matt Saracen.
Yeah. Also, Frank Grillo.
Yeah.
And who's then in the third one as well.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Big
He's
fan.
Not in the most recent one.
Really?
So I was wondering if they were going to try to sell Frank Grillo as a kind of thread throughout the franchise, if not an actual hero, then at least like a connecting thread.
Well,
but
he couldn't have been.
Not.
He couldn't have
no,
been in the first
one
because he would have been like eight. you know?
Right. Well, it's unclear how much time passes between the first Purge, and by that I mean the most recent movie,
right.
Not the first Purge movie.
No, that's what's confusing, too, is you're like, the second Purge is about the sixth Purge.
Okay, wait. So the first one is supposed to be in 2022, right?
So that's the fifth Purge?
This is like the initial Purge, but then there's the Purge Anarchy is 2023, right? It's the following year.
Let's explain the Purge to listeners who might not know how the Purge works.
What? Everybody knows about the Purge.
I did not know how it worked.
How?
The Purge is a series of horror films. They're not sequels. They are all about one idea and different takes on the same idea. They're created by a guy named Jason DeMonaco.
James DeMonaco.
No, I confused him and
who
Jason
Blum. Who is best
Blum,
known are, it, before The Purge for writing the movie Jack.
Yes, where Robin Williams ages four times faster than he should.
The concept is that at some point in the near future, America has elected a party, like a super right-wing, the new founding fathers of America.
Oh, yeah.
The
okay.
new founding fathers of America, NFFA. Because the crime and whatever, like there's so many problems in America, and somebody decides that they can all be solved if once a year, for a 24-hour period, all crime is legal, including murder.
I thought it was 12 hours. I thought it was 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. once a year, but I may be wrong. But that's why.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
It's only 12 hours?
It's only 12 hours. So it's I guess it's framed by the NFFA as like, well, there's so much unrest, we're going to solve it by having everyone express their violence during
purge
this period.
Their
get it all out during this 12-hour period.
You can't be tried for anything.
Can't be tried
murder's
for anything.
Murder's fine.
Murder's legal. Hospitals are closed.
Yeah.
Importantly, I think government officials are protected.
Oh, right.
Until Purge election year.
And you can't
to be
break
fair,
the rules.
All rich people are protected because they can afford to like armorize their house, which is what the first one is about.
But as you see in the first one, it doesn't always work.
First one is like a home invasion movie about Ethan Hawke and Cersei in a house in Chatsworth. It kind of makes no sense.
Yeah,
like, he's a security expert,
right?
So
he installed all the systems in the neighborhood.
But that kind of was like beside the point. Like, it really just is like a home invasion movie about the Purge that focuses on this one couple.
Like a homeless black guy tries to enter this suburban community. They take him in, like, because there's just this scuffle, and then they're keeping him. But the like white evil preps in blazers that come and try to terrorize them want to take the guy away from them so that they can murder him.
Right.
So it's sort of this chamber play.
I read about the making of it, and a lot of it was like, we wrote it because it was cheap to like make it all in one place. That's why.
No, and that's ingenious.
It is ingenious. I mean, and then in the second one, they expand the world of the Purge.
Because
so
they
see,
have more money.
Because they have more money. And it's the same, I think, as the first one. Like, it's all kind of cozy catastrophe, which is like where it's like a group of survivors trying to get through, you know, something insane. Yeah. It's kind of like just a post-apocalyptic movie, but the post-apocalypse only lasts for 12 hours at a time.
Yeah.
And if you break the rules during the Purge, then you get executed after the Purge.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's one of the things, is if you break the rules, if you like do something you're not supposed to, there's some rules you can break.
It's something about the like level of weapons. Guns are okay, but not tear gas or something.
I was really
no tanks.
I was really into the rules. I don't know why. I just
that's as a horror film. I think that makes it really good because, like, I think most horror films have a set of rules,
right?
And it's all about like when the rules get broken or if the rules are going to get broken. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of built into the Purge series, and I think it's really smart. But I also like that it tends to. And now with the fourth one also. The recurring imagery is, like a bunch of like middle or lower class people kind of like huddling together in their like dumpy apartments and trying to just like survive together.
These movies are wild political, is what I did not really know
about
them.
But you know, I feel like James DeMonaco was kind of avoiding talking about that up until the release of this one.
I think he was talking about it also during election year too, which is the one
before
this.
The second one came out in 2014. There's some stuff in it that's very like at the end, there's like a guy with like a scary American flag hat who's like the scariest guy. And I was like, this is like this is directly just MAGA hats and stuff.
But
what's
crazy is that it does kind of accidentally predict. I mean, it has its finger on the pulse in a way that's kind of creepy.
It was kind of hard to watch because it was like, though, this is reminds me way too much of like reality.
Exactly. You know, there have been a bunch of pieces that have kind of broken this down. There's a good one on Vox. But the first one, it was kind of like, you know, just playing off the home invasion and like, you know, almost like the Hunger Games aspect of the government pitting citizens against each other was almost like an incidental thing. And then in the second one, they brought in like this class anxiety. They brought in mistrust of the government.
Yeah. In the second one,
media
you find out
was like a really big thing because there was like, you know, you have to watch like the YouTube channels to get the real dirt on what's going
on.
You
find out that the Purge sucks. In the second one. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if they allude to it in the first one or if they decided in the second one that this was the thing, if they, like, had this all along. But
well, the whole thing about the first one is just, like, the illusion of this being a thing about families versus, like, some kind of marauding outsiders.
Right.
Kind of gets broken down in like, social and racial and economic terms in the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the second one, it's like, you find out there's a counterinsurgency against the Purge.
The counter-purgers.
Led by Michael K. Williams.
Led by Michael K. Williams, who's so good.
He's so good.
It's amazing.
Cool. Fuck the Purge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck the new founding fathers of America, because it's great. It really is great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in the second one, you find out that the Purge is basically just a scam for rich people to kill poor people and that they have started hiring, like, outside contractors, that the government is like sending in people basically to like kill people during the Purge.
Stir it up. Yeah.
Just to like kill more poor people during the Purge.
Yeah.
And that they use the fact that poor people are like excited about the Purge, like against them, because everybody's like, this is my right. Like, these are my freedoms. A lot of it seems very gun control-y because it's like people who are like, I have nothing but like one day a year I get to go shoot whoever I want and like that makes everything worthwhile.
Yeah, they actually like name check
the NRA.
The NRA.
Later,
The new one, so the new one is basically about the first Purge, as it's called, but that they do a trial run of it on Staten Island. And
I was saying, of course.
No, because we're saying, so the first one is Chatsworth, the second one is downtown LA. The third one is apparently was shot in
DC.
Providence, but takes place in DC. But it was shot in Providence, so a friend of the pod who went to RISD sent us a picture of when they built the giant guillotine in the alleyway outside her studio. She was like, it was actually like everything was blocked off because they were filming The Purge, so like nobody could like get food to their studio. And I was like, oh, so it was like The Purge. Yeah. And then I was like, what about like Purge Mates?
Nice.
The new one's in Staten Island. Of course, plenty of jokes to be made about that. But the thing that they set up is that they so they pay everybody. If they stay, they get $5,000. And so all these people who are, like, super poor are like, well, I'm not going to turn down $5,000 if I can just stay in my house and, like, you know, wait for it to blow over. But then they pay people more if they say that they're going to participate in it. And then they wear these they are given these contacts so that they can monitor their activity, and the contacts turn their eyes blue. It's so nuts. But so the thing that's crazy is that when they start the experiment, nobody's killing each other. Like, they're just like having parties and kind of just like hanging out. And some people are like stealing money from ATMs or whatever. So then that's when they start sending in the outsiders. And then also broadcasting when they're like, oh, there's been all this gang activity at whatever street and whatever street. And then broadcasting that back out to the people who live in Staten Island, being like, look at your neighbors. Look at how crazy they're being. Like, you should be afraid of them, which just felt like such a chilling.
Yep.
I had never seen that kind of laid out in those terms, or like a narrative that allows that kind of dynamic to be laid out in those terms, which I thought was so, so smart. I was so impressed with
it. It's very smart. I mean, weirdly, this is a genre that I think we all love, which is like weird sort of side science fiction of like, this could be happening now. It's not like quite in the future. It's like, this feels like now, but like a slightly more insane version of now, but like reality becomes more like The Purge every day.
Yeah, well, who would have known that the scribe who did Jack would have basically predicted our current dystopia? Can you confirm, Emily, is there really a pair of people in the first Purge named Anna and Elsa? Or Anna and Elsa?
Wait, what?
Yes. Yeah, so
in the first Purge?
The first Purge, meaning the most recent Purge, I heard that there are two sex workers whose names are Anna and Elsa. Which, of course,
I mean, there are two sex workers, but I didn't remember catching their names.
Curious Easter egg, if true.
Well, they're not Scandinavian.
Did you guys ever see Death Race 5000?
No.
Death Race 5000 is like a Roger Corman. Okay, so there's like a lot of Roger Corman movies that are about things like this because they're like exploitation movies and they're like an excuse for everyone to like kill each other in a movie. Death Race 5000 is a car race where you get points for running people over. Mm. Is it 5000 or 2000?
I think it's 2000.
Yeah, so it's all these people in a car race. It's basically like a gumball rally, but you get points for running people over. So the more people you run over, the more points you get. And then David Carradine is like a guy whose name is Frankenstein, who turns out to be like against the death race, I think. But also Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A movie we all love.
Yep.
Have you seen Punishment Park, anyone?
I haven't seen Punishment Park.
I think it's like on Criterion, but it's just like an art movie about like it's a punishment park. It's like a theme park where hippies get chased by cops, basically.
So there's a thing where it's really obvious, like an exploitation type movie thing where it's like, okay, the bad government in this movie has created a set of circumstances that create a very entertaining movie for us. And you can kind of like lay back and like, as long as you accept those terms, you understand like, you know, there can be some social commentary, but also you're like enjoying the violence and on its own terms in a way.
It's hard to watch sometimes because you're like a little bit. It's hard to watch. It's disturbing.
But I would argue that compared to things like Funny Games or Your Next, there's so much more.
They're also funny.
To go off of.
It's not like torture porn. It doesn't feel just like people getting tortured and like, oh, isn't this bad? It's like a little bit funny. It's a little bit like more poppy or something that makes it.
Well, it's also,
kind of
it's just, it's interesting to see the different iterations of it, like how it opens up. And especially to end it with the idea that, like, there was a time a long time ago when it was an experiment and you could escape because it's just Staten Island.
Right.
And then in each subsequent film, that's erased. So it's like, you can't.
It's
and
about,
I guess,
like, hyper-normalization, too. Right. It's like, this thing that seemed really fucked up when they first announced it, then everybody just got used to it really fast.
Yeah.
Which is, like, something we've all been dealing with a lot. That can't happen. And then it's like, oh, it's happening, and everyone just sort of like got used to it somehow.
And it's also the question of how do you kind of moderate your response to something very extreme? And in The Purge, the good guys will fight back with the same violence that the bad guys are fighting with. And, you know, it makes you really consider like how extreme things have to get before you are complicit just by nothing.
Like the counter-purgers in the second one are kind of like, they seem like kind of like patterned after the Black Panthers or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're militant. They're like, the government is a bunch of militant, insane people. And, like, we have to fight back against them using, like, things that are illegal because, like, they're doing things that should be illegal.
Right.
I just think, like, there are parts of in all the movies where it's, like, the only way to fight back is to just, like, do more violence. But I think that the most recent one definitely interrogates that more and is like, I don't ever feel like it. There actually is less violence, I would say, in the most recent one. And it's more just about like this sort of sense of dread and like kind of this closing.
There's
like
a lot of dread.
Yeah.
It wasn't maybe as cathartic as I wanted it to be. Yeah. I was sort of just like, oh, like this also feels like things feel a lot right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's also like, it's obviously none of it feels very far-fetched at this point, especially.
Right,
but it also was just making me think about, like, if it's a comment on, like, sundowner laws, which were the super racist laws that everywhere had, especially. There have been, like, some incidents in L.A., and somebody was talking about, like, you know, Glendale being such a nice town. And then somebody was like, well, you know, Glendale had, like, sundown laws until, like, very recently.
And for people who don't know what sundown laws are, it was basically a, you know, an un, it wasn't a, was it an actual
no, it was
law,
like an
law,
unwritten
an
rule,
understood thing that if you were a person of color, you could not be in that place
right.
after dark.
It was an unwritten rule of like, if a person of color is in this white neighborhood after dark, then like whatever happens to them is like
not gonna, you're, yeah. you won't be prosecuted for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, man, the purge.
The purge. Well, you can either call or text us at 240-46-NIGHT, or you can send us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Also, as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and follow us on social media. We have a Facebook group, Night Call Podcast, Instagram, Night Call Podcast, and Twitter, Night Call Pod. And now let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
Hi, Night Call Podcast. Not sure if this belongs on Night Call, but I'm calling to ask for any advice that you might have. I'm a 20-year-old guy living in Berkeley, California. I just got out of college. Got a pretty useless degree that has improved my interests. Luckily, I don't have a huge student loan debt. But I'm wondering what advice you have for people getting out of college who I have no idea what to do with their lives. I'm not really passionate about any particular interest to make it a career. But I do want to be able to support my family and be successful with that in the future. But for the strange days and lonely nights, this is what I've been thinking about, and I'm sure many people think about this. So if you have any advice, please do so on the podcast. Thank you.
I feel like we've been talking about this in some form or another. Caller is just asking about, you know, post-college general anxiety, trying to figure out what you're going to do, you know, big questions like that. And we've certainly been thinking about that, I think, in terms of our jobs and how we came to our jobs and all the weird uncertainty that preceded us having the various lines of work that we have. So, yeah, I mean, do you guys have any advice that you have for our caller?
In the car on the way here, we were like, we're gonna have a fun time answering this question because we're the worst people to answer it. But we've been talking, all of the three of us, about the general kind of like just implosion of online media, the Univision sale of The Onion, AV Club, the Gizmodo Media Group. I mean, it's just kind of endless. Every week it seems like a new place that we either one of us used to write for or we're all big fans of is folding. And I think right after we graduated from college, that was a time when people were, you know, if you had a blog, it was like kind of embarrassing slightly.
There was a time when people were embarrassed to admit how much time they spent on the internet.
Yes.
And
right.
They would like
yeah.
pretend not to be on the internet.
Where you'd say like, oh, a friend of mine said, and it's like, no, they weren't your friend and they didn't say it out loud.
Yeah.
You read it on a blog.
And then there was like a point when it turned where suddenly everybody was like open about how much time they spent on the internet.
Yes.
And then it became kind of a joke. Like, haha, we all spend our whole lives on the internet.
Yeah.
Extremely online.
And then
totally online.
Some of us got paid to write on the internet for a while. I totally naively thought that like the money and ad stuff from magazines would just like eventually move to the web.
Right.
You know, that like, well, magazines
are
dying.
It did, just in like such a diffuse, like
microscopic way. I don't even know that it did. Yeah. I mean, I feel
it did for like 15 minutes.
It felt like it was any moment now we're going to figure out how to like monetize blogs the way that we monetize magazines with like big ads. And then it turned out that's way harder than anyone thought, or just it's because it works differently. It doesn't.
Well, because the web had been around and creating good content for free for so long, but nobody had really acknowledged it as a legitimate source. I think everybody was like very skeptical and kind of took offense at reading like an advertorial, having a pop-up ad, having like embedded ad links. It was very offensive. It was like, this is supposed to be free. This is supposed to be something we all create together. But I think between like 2007 and 2010, it seemed reasonable all of a sudden to believe that there was like an actual career to be had.
Yeah, I don't think any of us were like trying to get into blogging.
No.
It just was like it appeared.
No. I mean, I think that the way I can like generalize a little bit of advice to bring it outside of just the media thing, but just I think something we've all kind of shared I think we all kind of thought of ourselves as writers in some way or another. And then this sort of opportunity came up, or like you could sense that there was some kind of gold rush happening, maybe two steps to the left of what maybe we would have envisioned as being a writer's job.
Yes.
Or something. And so you kind of just sort of make that shift over and be like, well, this is basically like what I want to do. This is the way that I could maybe see some money for it.
Yeah.
And I think in those times too, this is like a theme I think of our generation. Like you come into everything with a fear of selling out and you get that worn down over time.
Right. So, and then you're like, please, please may I sell out?
Yes, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Give
please
me the opportunity
let me sell out.
To sell out.
You know, that's the thing. It's like we graduated kind of right into the recession. And so a lot of the things that were of the recession, I just thought were like what happens when you're 22, which is like nobody wants to hire you and you can't get jobs you are overqualified for. And then you start applying for like retail and food service jobs and you can't get those either because like everybody else is trying to get those.
Yeah.
I think you should take the most interesting shitty job you can. Like, apply for an array of things, and they don't have to at all correspond to what you studied in college, and pick the most interesting one, because the interesting ones always lead to something else, but the uninteresting ones take up so much of your time and leave you with nothing, I think.
I would add to the interesting ones, if you can find an interesting one that also has a hard out every day, which is more and more rare the more and more that jobs are telecommunication.
That's
or not
something we talk about a lot.
Yeah,
being able to have a division between your work life and your life is like very important and maybe not something that any of us like knew we needed to prioritize when we started because we were just like so excited to get paid
to do
something. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming that there's kind of a deadline on this, like you need to start making money soon. So I would say if you need to like find a job that you're telling yourself you're not going to have forever, but is like the job you have while you're figuring stuff out, then definitely have one that you can walk away from when you leave it.
And don't like pressure yourself to get the job you're going to have for the rest of your life when you're like,
no,
right out of college, because those jobs don't exist anymore anyway.
No. And nobody has that.
Yeah. Nobody has that. And also they secretly suck because they know that they have cachet with you and so they can treat you like garbage. But if there's something that's like a little quirky that you are into but that maybe other people wouldn't be, then at least you get a great story and at least you get an idea of what you liked about the weird thing and didn't like. Whereas I think like, I mean, definitely the worst jobs I've worked were not in food service or retail but in offices doing nothing for a company that didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Because it just, you leave, it's like it sucked your brain dry. It hasn't given you any interesting experiences. You're interacting with the same people all the time. There's like, it's a higher pressure job, so you can't really leave it when you leave. Two of the people that I most kind of have been interested in their careers since we all graduated, one of them was a girl in a box at the Standard Hotel. And I was like, I remember I was like, should I apply to this? I don't think I'm cute enough to apply to this, but also like I would feel crappy about myself. She went through that whole thing and she wrote a book and it was great.
Yeah, I think a lot of probably there was a time when it felt like a lot of people were like, I'm going to do something weird so then I can write a book about it.
But if but even if it's just like it would pay you the same amount as waiting tables, but at least even if you don't write a book, it's like you have the story and you're thinking like, God, I hate it for these reasons. I've got to get out. So it like motivates you more because you get that fire.
And it puts you in a situation you wouldn't have been in normally with people that you might not have been in with normally, even if it's unpleasant. Like, nothing's going to be forever at that age. Oh, this is the other thing I would say. Don't get married to the idea that your best work
is going
to happen.
I thought you were just going to say, don't get married.
Also, don't get married.
Like, right when you get out of college.
Hey, I'm back from my honeymoon. And yes, guys.
No, I thought you meant, like don't get married when you're 22, but also don't get married.
Well, also
to
don't
an
do
idea.
That, honestly. But also just don't fall in love with this idea that you will create your best work or that the prime of your professional and or creative or whatever you're trying to do in life is post-collegiate, because it's not. Like, I, speaking from a very specific instance, this goes back to why I was at the Cecil Hotel. Like, I graduated from school. I got a script optioned in heavy scare quotes. I don't want to get too much into the legal aspects of it. And it didn't happen because it just didn't happen and there wasn't the funding for it. It was also 2008 or 2009. Like, nobody was funding independent film. But had it happened, like, that would be the end of my career because it was a terrible script.
Right.
And it would have been a really bad movie. I wouldn't be able to still accumulate experiences and, like, think about what I actually want to do instead of, like, hurrying up after school to be like, this is my genius piece of work that I'm going to do, like, as a college graduate. So don't, like, let yourself, like, not be a student for a while.
Yeah.
Well, as a rebuttal to that, though, I think my life would have been a lot better if I just booked that role in the movie that I auditioned for pretty much right out of college that was Golden Retrievers in Space.
Ooh.
So I'm just saying, like, sometimes you do take the flyer.
Oh,
and then other times, point taken. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say my main advice, not that I'm the person to give advice, but yeah, don't do something you hate. And it's okay to, like, get life experience and not think that you have to, like, find your passion immediately and do it. It's like picking a major. It's like you give yourself some time in college to pick a major, give yourself some time out of college to, like, find out what you actually want to do. And if you want to be around people, be around people.
And go party, because you should.
Yeah, go party.
Like, you feel like you shouldn't because now you're an adult.
No,
but
no,
you should definitely
go,
like,
party,
go party.
Later your bones will hurt.
Your bones will hurt. And right now, like, everything's so bad. I just wish I were 20 years old and was, like, in a, just could put it away and party, but I can't. I just read the news.
I wouldn't be able to party. I feel like I'm glad that, like, nothing cataclysmic was happening.
And
it was,
like,
just, yeah, we were, like, Y2K partying.
I would have loved to be at a Y2K rave, but no, I was not. I basically just wanted to be at the party at the end of Strange Days. But,
oh, yeah. I wanted to be in Independence Day when the stripper's on the roof and she's holding up the sign to welcome the aliens. That's me. Yeah, I mean, one really honest piece of advice that I would give is, like, if you can learn how to program, do that.
You've just gone full dad.
But it's true.
That's something, like, everyone's dad has already said.
I know, but I'm just like, the thing about writing is, like, everyone gets paid completely different amounts of money.
Yeah.
Just, you know, depending on, like, who you're doing it for and how much money they have. And sometimes you hear people who used to work in magazines and they tell you how much money you used to be able to make in magazines, and then you have to go, like, walk into the ocean.
Yeah. However, let me just say, how many times has either your dad or someone else's dad or just a person who's not a dad been like, Molly, you should learn to program?
No, because
I
don't.
Like, great advice, but I'm not going to do it.
No, because
it's the plastics of our age.
My brain doesn't know how to program, but my friend Sarah, who went to film school, then also taught herself how to program, and now she works as a programmer. I'm just saying it's a field where people actually get hired to do a thing.
Fair.
And they need it.
I'm vibrating with happiness. Also, in case you can't tell, Molly and I are out of the garage. We are in a studio. Thank you,
in
Audio Boom.
In a studio.
So thank you to Audio Boom for doing that. Hopefully we'll be sounding even more than more us than we are.
We're in a soundproof room. It's really cool.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
And thank you to our producer, as always, Ben Hosley.
Thank you, Ben
here
Hosley.
On the East Coast. We got double studio action.
Double studio.
This was This for This Week. We are back next week with more Night Call. Again,
give us a Night Call at 240-469.
Follow us on the Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook now has a group if you want to join.
Yeah, we have a group.
Whoever runs the Twitter account will start tweeting again.
Whoever runs the Twitter account is back from Japan and we'll start tweeting. Whoever runs the Instagram account, you can also send us questions there. You can really send us questions or comments or...
All channels are open.
All channels are open, but now the Facebook group, if you want a little more interactivity...
And meet your fellow night callers.
Yeah, and if you want to send us memes or make memes, make some night call memes, we'll take it. Emily, welcome back. We missed you.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back. We're gonna have a legendary summer. I can feel it.
Yep. It's a surgical summer. Oh no, it's the purgical summer.
The purgical summer. Yes. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Hi. Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.